Well, Gary, as you know, I go by the name Rev Rob here in Kansas City, and one of the things I do when I have artists on the show is that they have to pay their pittance, you know, confess to the Reverend.
Okay, I'll confess to the Reverend.
All right. And not that this is a sin per se, but I want to talk a little bit about your fashion. And it's because with people seeing your live show, scrolling through the photos online, they must notice, as I did, a pretty eclectic taste in shirts. Loud colors, patterns, things like that. So I'm curious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite one from that wardrobe?
Well, it's like I discovered Robert Graham dress shirts, you know?
Okay.
And they are the most unique designs. Every single shirt is so very different from the other ones. And I love to wear very, very colorful, loud shirts on stage because my dad told me when I was real young, he says, you got to wear something on stage that nobody else has. You know, I don't really care too much about that. I just want to look good.
Yeah. Well, you sound good, too. And speaking of sweaters and shirts, I've noticed a couple of times you wearing a shirt that says, I love my golden doodle. Now, before I have the phone...
Absolutely.
Before I have the phone lighting up, your golden doodle is your dog, right? It's a breed between a poodle and a golden retriever, if I'm not mistaken.
That's exactly right. Yes, yeah. And I have two of them, brother and sister.
Oh, and what are their names?
Molly and Mickey.
Oh.
And, I'm telling you, when I have to leave town, I miss them so much, but it's cool because our daughter sends me pictures of them every day.
Well, good.
I just love dogs and all animals.
Maybe we could expect a new song penned about Mickey and Molly?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, the thought has crossed my mind.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, you know.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that dog is for sale.
Well, you got to do something during those hard winters in Rochester, New York, right? That's where currently you've set up camp?
That's right, Rochester, New York. Well, actually about 12 miles south of Rochester. It's way out in the country. We got a beautiful property. We have 11 acres. That I take care of the entire property, but I don't want to hire people to take care of it. I want to do it. It's so much fun to me, and plus it's like therapy.
There's a tradition of greenery, sunlight, fresh air, and the sheer joy of open space. Flowers. The flowers, friend, are phenomenal in Rochester. And I'm not just talking about the world-celebrated Lilac Festival each spring. I'm talking about the community compulsion to plant wherever there's a square foot of sod that can stand brightening. Truly, the entire population seems born with or converted to the green thumb.
Yeah, it's a labor of love. And speaking of love, I want to talk a little bit about your first love, which, can I assume it was the drum kit?
Yeah, absolutely. The drums were my very first instrument. I started playing drums when I was 5 years old. And my dad had this friend that always used to come over and visit, and he would take me out to the room where the drums were. He said, come on, kid, let me show you a few things. So he would show me all these different drumming things that were really so cool, and it wasn't until I was about 12 years old that I realized this friend of my dad was Buddy Rich.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was taking lessons for 7 years from Buddy Rich.
Doesn't get much better than that. Wow.
I'm telling you.
We'll be right back. drums, and gentlemen.
Well, speaking of fairy tales, kind of like that story, it's a familiar place to all of us where you kind of were discovered, right? Disneyland?
Yeah, Disneyland, yep. We auditioned in 1964 with 10 other bands. We auditioned to get the summer job of June, July, and August. And I didn't want any kind of favoritism or anything, so I just called the band Gary and the Playboys. No last name, mm-hmm. You know. I just wanted to see if we could do it on our own. And sure enough, we got the job for those 3 months. And that was the very first paying job we ever had. And that's where our producer from Liberty Records, a guy named Snuffy Garrett, mm-hmm. saw us. He was out at the park with his family. And after the show, he came backstage and he gave me his card. And he said, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about doing some recording for us. Now, isn't that the way every new group wishes it would happen?
Oh, yeah.
That was it. We went over to Liberty Records. He played us a couple of demos. One of those demos was This Diamond Ring.
Oh, yeah.
And we said, yeah, we'd love to do it. So we were in the studio like within 3 months of first meeting him.
Wow. Jeez.
I mean, what a blessing, you know?
Number one hit went straight to the charts like it was a bullet. And, you know, I think my parents would be pretty happy if I brought home A's on my report card, but here you are out on your own with number one. Your mom was your manager at the time, right? I imagine she thought, hey, this was a pretty good investment.
Well, yeah. You know, my mom said, okay, I'll give you the money for the amps and the drums and the guitars and the rehearsal halls and everything. But you can't tell your dad anything about it right now, because if this whole project fails, I have to come up with an excuse as to where this money went.
Uh-oh.
So we didn't tell my dad until Diamond Ring was about number 20 on the charts and still going up. Then I told my dad, and he said, well, when did this all happen? You know, and I said, yeah, we were pretty cool keeping it from you.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
It was.
So about this time, you're out with Dick Clark and Herman's Hermits and Gene Pitney out on the Caravan of Star tours, right?
Right, right. Caravan of Stars. It was great, you know, like 10 acts on a bus doing 6 to 8 weeks of one-nighters. And, you know, it wasn't tiring at all because we were young. We were excited about the newness of the whole thing, you know, and people responded to us like they responded to the Beatles, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit shorter
so
hair.
It was nothing bad about the whole thing.
Wow, what a great way to see America and rub elbows with those that you would share the charts with later. That's too exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we were on that tour with people that I listened to and loved before I even got into rock and roll.
My goodness.
Gene Pitney, Brian Hyland, the Yardbirds, the Crystals,
wow.
Sam the Sham, and the Pharaohs.
Wow.
It was just great.
It's the greatest stage show, in-person stage show, ever to come to this part of Virginia. The Dick Clark Caravan of Stars at Roanoke's Victory Stadium, Monday, July 27th.
Well, I'm curious about this time, maybe a little bit later, you kind of stepped out from the shadows behind that drum kit and came to the front because, well, you know, Gary Lewis and the Playboys needed to have Gary Lewis up front. So was it about this time that you now switched to guitar and we're starting to write some of these hits?
Yeah, I played drums on the first four singles, you know, about the first year and a half. And then, it just kind of dawned on me that, you know, from behind the drums, I can't see anybody. I can't see the audience. They can't see me behind all those cymbals and everything. So I said, you know, I got to play to the people. I got to be able to dance around and feel the music and all that. So
right.
I came up front, played guitar, and I hired a drummer, which turned out to be one of the best drummers in the country, a guy named Jim Keltner.
Mm-hmm.
He played with George Harrison, Eric Clapton.
Wow.
All these great people, you know, turned out to be very famous in his own right, too.
Right.
He was also the drummer for the Traveling Wilburys, too.
Wow. And you also had Hal Blaine, a session drummer from the Wrecking Crew, on some of those records, right?
Well, the Wrecking Crew only did overdubs.
Okay.
Myself and the Playboys played on all the basic tracks.
Yep.
You know, we didn't use the Wrecking Crew because my guys were good enough.
Yeah.
And you can be sure that if we weren't good enough, our arranger, Leon Russell, at the time, he wouldn't have let us play on the basic tracks if we weren't good enough.
Wow. And around 1965, you're the sole American on the top 10 in May. The rest is the British invasion. And you've just been awarded Cashbox Magazine's Male Vocalist of the Year, beating out Elvis, Frank Sinatra. You're on cloud nine, right?
That's right. Well, you know, I mean, I was at that award ceremony, and I knew I was being nominated. And then they announced, okay, the best male singer in 1965, Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, and Gary Lewis. Well, I got up, and I was on my way out. I really was. I said, oh, there's no way. There's no way. And then they said my name, and I could not believe it. I mean, that's one of the greatest honors I've ever had, beating out these two guys. Are you kidding me?
Wow. So about this time, you string together just even more chart-topping hits with Count Me In, right? Save Your Heart. Sure Gonna Miss Her. She's Just My Style. Everyone Loves a Clown. Green Grass. But then you trade in that green grass for Green Fatigues, right? You're drafted into our nation's military.
Yeah, after Green Grass, that's when I got my draft notice.
Mm-hmm.
And needless to say, I was really thrilled about that.
Yeah. So you're in the military. Where did they assign
right.
you?
Well, I was in the. I had to go into the service, you know, and everybody's saying, oh, you know, your dad can get you out of that. Just go for it, you know. And I said, no, Elvis did it. I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's probably the best thing I could have done because you grow up awfully fast in the Army, I'll tell you that. And
mm-hmm.
I needed that. And plus, I get the respect of all these different Vietnam groups. At various shows, they give me plaques saying, thank you so much for your service, and your music has kept us all alive over here, and this and that.
Wow.
So, you know, it was great.
March along.
To victory, we're the Army and
campaign is loud and strong. For wherever we go, you will always know that the army goes rolling along.
Well, appreciate you sharing that. No doubt an inspiration for a lot of our servicemen and women. And now we enter the time when you're back home, and this happens to be one of those favorite things I have when I watch like an action hero movie, when someone comes and tries to pull the star out of retirement. And that's kind of what happened to you, right? You're owning your own music store, well, and someone says, hey, the music's back.
Well,
let's get on the road.
When I got out of the service, Liberty Records kind of informed me, well, hey, you know, there's no more market for you and your kind of music. I said, oh, well, thanks a lot, everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, because Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, you know, they were happening, harder rock and roll. And, I mean, even though I liked it, I didn't see myself doing that just for the sake of staying in music.
Sure.
So what I did was I kind of bowed out of everything and bought a music store in Southern California, just outside of Los Angeles, and I gave drum lessons, guitar lessons, sold guitars and drums. And I did that from 72 to 84. And then in 84, this agent gives me a call and says, hey, man, the 60s is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, right. Who is this? And it was an actual agent. And he said, I can book you 60 to 100 dates a year because there is a renewed interest in 60s music. I said, well, if you can book it, I'll play them. And since 84, that's exactly what's been going on.
Wow. How often are you on the road?
Probably every weekend. And then during summer, you know, we go out for a week at a time because all the county and state fairs, you don't have to wait till the weekend. They're going through the week, too. So we play everywhere. We just got back from Manila and the Philippines.
Wow.
Playing a week over there. You know, and we played Hong Kong and Thailand.
Wow.
Indonesia. So, you know, we play everywhere, actually. Like we did the Happy Together tour with the Turtles. You know, just a lot of other people.
I had no idea Gary Lewis and the Playboys were popular in the Philippines and Singapore. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. I know. But I couldn't get arrested in Europe, though.
Oh.
I went over there trying to promote, and they just wouldn't have it. They just would not have it.
Well, we know how popular you were in the U.S., and we enjoyed the music throughout the years. One of the things that you spent a lot of time in front of was the camera. And I'm talking specifically a number of TV shows you appeared on, with appearances on Hullabaloo and the Ed Sullivan Show. You know, it's kind of a vague question, but looking back, was there any antics or bloopers that just kind of stand out at you whenever you reminisce?
Nothing that comes to mind.
All right.
You know, no, because everything was just great. We played Ed Sullivan the first time to break This Time and Ring to the Country, and then he asked us back 5 more times.
Wow.
And everything just went beautiful. I mean, Hullabaloo, first network rock and roll show. I hosted it one time by myself, and then I hosted it one time with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I probably did every local rock and roll show all around the country.
Thank you very kindly, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Hullabaloo. And now for our first act, I'm very sorry, Gary. It was your line. It's been so long since I've worked with someone else before. No.
That's my mistake, Dad. It was your line because you've got to introduce myself in a Playboy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, my son, the singer.
They see me coming, but you don't laugh, you just go.
Busy man. Busy man now. And because you're a busy man, I won't keep you too much longer, Mr. Lewis. I am curious.
Okay.
What are you working on now? Any projects or any other hobbies that fill your time?
The only hobbies I really have are watching the Los Angeles Dodgers baseball game.
Oh, I didn't realize you're a big fan. It makes sense, though. You spend a lot of time.
I am a big Dodger fan because I was a fan of theirs since 1955 when they were the Brooklyn Dodgers, and they won the World Series over the Yankees that year.
Oh, boy.
So when they came to Los Angeles, it was the same Brooklyn Dodgers.
Oh, wow.
You know? And I got to meet them all. My dad put them in a movie of his.
Huh.
I got to practice with them and throw the ball around. And, oh, my God, a kid's dream, you know?
Yeah.
So I love baseball. That's my hobby.
Brooklyn's faithful fans roar and salute and hope as the Dodgers take the field. Elston Howard sends a grounder to Pee Wee Reese, and these Dodgers at last are world champions. Delirious with joy, teammates and fans mob the Brooklyn pitcher in wild acclaim. In the Dodger clubhouse is the pandemonium only a great victory can generate. And setting the zany pace are Gil Hodges, Duke Snyder, and Don Newcomb. This is Brooklyn's greatest baseball day.
Well, what I'm doing right now is we're playing Las Vegas. We're playing the Golden Nugget tonight.
Wow.
And then we're going to Nashville, and we're going to be doing the Huckabee Show.
Okay.
I don't know when that's going to be aired, but we're doing it the 28th of August, and then the 31st, as you know, is Branson, Missouri.
Yep. Well, we hope you don't strike it rich at the Golden Nugget so that we can still see you in Branson.
I'm not gambling. The only time I gamble is when I order out.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Well, there's no doubt that if we roll the dice to come see you in Branson, that we'll come out ahead. So we're really looking forward to seeing you. Thank you so much, Mr. Lewis.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Sunshine out to grow the green grass around my window.